Is your firm about to embark on the CAS journey? Do you even know what CAS stands for? This is the Issues Watch podcast. Hi, I'm Don Meyer, Chief Marketing Officer at the New Jersey Society of CPAs, and welcome to the Issues Watch podcast. As a relatively young practice area, CAS is still a fluid discipline. So fluid, in fact, that not everyone agrees on what CAS actually means or what these practices consist of. There is widespread agreement, however, that it's an extraordinarily profitable area with growth rates that are often double those of the accounting profession's more well-established service lines. Here with me to discuss CAS and the results of a new survey by CPA.com and the AICPA is Amy Bridges, Professional Development Manager at CPA.com. Welcome, Amy.
It's really nice to be here today.
Great, great. So let's start with a tricky question. Does CAS stand for Client Advisory Services or Client Accounting Services or both?
You know, tricky perhaps, but really a great question because it speaks to the idea that CAS has been evolving for more than a decade. When CPA.com first started talking about CAS about 15 years ago, many people at the time were referring to this as client accounting services. And the thought was that you're just outsourcing the compliance piece of, you know, a client's accounting department. As the service line has evolved, we've seen that that outsourcing has grown to include not just the accounting functions, but also the controller level functions, and now the CFO or even the business insight level functions, which really gets into the idea of accounting and advisory. So while we see that some folks are still using CAS to talk about client accounting services, CPA.com defines CAS as client advisory services. In our new CAS benchmark survey, one of the things that we noticed was that we really moved the needle on the use of the word or on the use of the acronym CAS. We had more than 63% of our respondents use either CAS to stand for accounting, CAS to stand for advisory, or CAAS to stand for both accounting and advisory. But I think, you know, back to your original question, what's it stand for? I think the future of CAS is to include the advisory piece. Clients are looking for a breadth of services, a spectrum of services that go beyond compliance and really include the types of advising to help clients get to a more profitable place, to a better business model. And CPAs and CAS services, CAS practices are really uniquely positioned to offer that entire spectrum of services.
Okay, great. I didn't know there was a CAAS.
I think it's a little awkward, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. Anytime you double up on a letter, it gets a little clunky. And what I have found is that sometimes it depends on who's saying it. If someone is more involved on the advisory side, then CAS, is client advisory services, and vice versa. If they're on the accounting side, then it's client accounting services. But yeah, I do seem to see client advisory service more than the other.
I think that's a move that's really been made in the last probably 3 to 5 years. And again, that speaks to the evolution of what clients are looking for.
Right. All right. Well, now that's out of the way. Tell us about the CAS benchmark survey and some of the key takeaways from the report.
Right. This is the third iteration of this survey. And I think that anybody who has any familiarity with survey methodology or how this kind of thing works knows that the first year that you field a survey, you're just, you know, sort of laying the groundwork. And the second time you field a survey, you're hoping to correct some of the initial mistakes. So the third iteration of a survey is really exciting. And Don, that's exactly what this is. The first one was fielded back in 2018. The second was fielded in 2020. And in 2020, we were looking at fiscal year 2019 data, so pre-global pandemic. In our 2022 survey, the one that was just released in December of 2022, we actually asked for calendar year 2021 data. So we've skewed the reporting period just a little bit, but it's allowed us to sort of you know, have some before and after around the economic and, you know, staffing considerations that happened in 2020. This survey was really trying to get to the heart of what is CAS, what, you know, what's really happening. And I want to point out that as our listeners are looking at this survey report, which I hope you will, I hope everybody will go out and take a look at it. We want to point out that this is a great snapshot of where this practice area was at the end of 2021. So, you know, the top performer data that we defined as being the top quartile of respondents based on net client fees per professional, we'll talk about what that is. You know, that's probably aspirational, but when you look at the overall medians, you know, you may feel that some of these are kind of low. We agree. We know that the respondents for this year's survey really are all the way across the spectrum in terms of what they're doing and how long they've been doing it. So the first thing that I have to report out of the survey is that we were so excited that, you know, interest in this survey nearly doubled from the previous year. And actually, once we cleared out the data, the valid responses had increased by more than 75%, which is really a fantastic response. Again, I think it speaks to the interest in client advisory services and that growth and evolution that we're seeing in CAS. The next thing that I'll say is that we saw CAS practices respond who were as new as less than a year. And then, you know, firms who had some type of service line that had evolved into CAS over decades. So really, we are very fortunate to have data from firms who are kind of at all points of that type of spectrum. We also saw firms who were responding who are really just doing a lot of bookkeeping and a little bit of outsourced accounting, all the way up to the other end of that spectrum, which are firms who, you know, have finance staff who are able to do, you know, that top level advising really beyond accounting, really into the business insights part of advising. So it's a great survey with data from all points on a couple of different axes of a spectrum, if we wanted to think about it that way.
Right. And as you said, I strongly encourage our viewers and our listeners to check out the survey. We'll provide a link to that. Well, one of the key findings from the survey was that CAS practices have embraced innovation, no surprise, and business model changes, also no surprise. Can you give some examples of what these new approaches might look like?
Absolutely. You know, CPA.com has talked about best practices in client advisory services, again, you know, for more than a decade. And we've often talked about the fact that the thing that early in the evolution of CAS, early, the thing that set CAS apart was offering these services on a foundation of cloud-based technology. In 2023, talking about cloud-based technology doesn't seem like quite as big of a deal as it did a decade ago. Right. But it's still important to start with that as a differentiator. The great thing about CAS, and I think one of the reasons that so many firms and so many practitioners are looking to start offering this type of service, is that it's something that can be done remotely. You don't need to be visiting client offices. You don't need to have staff who are coming to an office every day. So I think the first differentiator is this idea that it's built on a foundation of technology, and it's built on that idea that you don't have to be, you know, you don't have to be in your client's office. I think the second best practice that we're seeing firms adopt that really moves the needle is the idea of dedicated staff. It starts with a, you know, somebody who's going to head the service line who is completely dedicated to this. And CPA.com talks to folks, you know, we talk to firms every day who say, you know, we were doing this for a while with some shared staff, but once we really made that change, we made the dedication to having staff that do nothing but CAS, that's when we really started to see success. And the numbers bear that out. When we started to slice the data, we see that those top performers largely have dedicated staff. We saw that, firms that are starting with dedicated staff are able to move more quickly. They're able to grow more quickly. So that concept of having staff that are doing just client accounting or client advisory services and not, taking a 2-month break to go do tax work, for example, it's great for the staff. It's great for the firm. It's great for the clients. I think another thing that we see that's, kind of shifting the needle is, again, the idea of the services that you're offering and how you're pricing those. Mm-hmm. So CAS is about being proactive in the service offerings. And I've already talked a lot about advisory, but I think that clients often come in with a problem and they don't know what the solution is that they're looking for. So they're not going to ask you to sit down and do, 5-year forecasting with them. But as you listen to their problem, you realize that that's a service that they need. It's also a chargeable service. So I think that one of my favorite things about being in the accounting profession is working with practitioners and professionals who are just so excited to help their clients. Yeah. But I think that desire to help our clients also puts us in a situation where we often give away that work for free. Mm-hmm. And, setting it up as a service that you can really take to a deep place with your client, really do some great work for them, help them to really see what they're going to be able to do with their business in the next 3 to 5 years if we continue to use that forecast model, rather than just having, some conversations around the edges. It's a really fantastic service for that client to be able to do some bigger planning. And it's something that they will pay for. Clients will absolutely pay for this. So understanding that the services that you offer can be offered proactively in order to help those clients, and also understanding that the way that clients see the value of that service isn't attached to hourly billing, and then setting up a price structure that goes along with the value, not just the hours that you're putting into something, really puts these CAS practices in a place where they're looking at profitability in a whole different way, and in a really profitable way once they sort of detach the billable hour.
And I do want to touch on pricing in a little bit, but I wanted to go back to that kind of idea of specialization. CAS or CAS can include so many different things. It include technology as a service, it could CFO services, HR, even marketing. Are you finding, either through the survey or even just anecdotally, that clients are looking for specialization? So even though that CAS is very broad, when they work with somebody on the firm side, they're looking for somebody who is somewhat or completely an expert in that particular area, as opposed to somebody who's more of a generalist. Are we in an age of specialization when it comes to CAS?
We really think that we are. I'll throw out for you that the strongest three correlations in the data, in the third iteration of the CAS benchmark survey, the strongest correlations to success, and success defined by high net client fees per professional, and then just higher net client fees. The strongest three correlations were the length of time you've been offering CAS. So we see a real tipping point that happens after about 2 years. The second really strong correlation was around dedicated staffing. And the third really strong correlation was around firms who are not trying to, or CAS practices that are not trying to be generalists. In other words, they've looked at the type of clients that they're serving, and they are looking to either niche down or serve clients in particular industries. So, they may have clients that are in different industries, but those clients all have something that is a strong commonality, or they pick one or more industries and really go deep into that industry. What this does for those CAS practices is allows them to really standardize. You can use the same reports across a variety of clients. So you take the time to build a series of reports, to build a series of repeatable processes. Your staff, who are all working with similar clients, you know, have the same processes that they use for all clients. As you become more efficient, you become more profitable. And again, that's one of the reasons that you don't necessarily want to be charging in that hourly kind of fashion, because you don't want to lose that profit as you get better and better at what you're doing for clients.
So let's talk about pricing. The report highlighted several key strategies for CAS practice leaders, including raising fees to reflect value. Are you actually seeing the leaders in the CAS leaders making the switch to value pricing, or are firms still married to that ever popular billable hour?
We are absolutely seeing that CAS practices are making the shift away from the billable hour. We know that it's kind of the default. When you don't know how to price something, you have a tendency to price it hourly. But more and more, we have seen practice leaders who have new strategies for the way that they are able to price things. So recently, again, anecdotally, I'll tell you that, you know, I had a conversation with someone who said, we're able to price everything in our CAS practice in terms of kind of a fixed fee that's based on value, except for cleanup work. We just haven't figured out how to do that yet. We still bill our cleanup work hourly. I had another practitioner who said, I figured it out. When we bring on a new client, if they want us to go back and clean up their books for the previous 6 months, we charge them their regular price, their regular monthly fee, 6 months worth, because that's the work we would have done.
Right.
And I thought this was fantastic because, you know, even if that's not a model that works in every CAS practice, and it may not be, it speaks to this idea that we're learning to think about new ways to price something that's really based on the value to the client and not based on the sheer number of hours that we're putting into something. Because here's the problem. You know, we may not know how many hours it's going to take us. And in one case, you know, we may say we think it's going to be about 10 hours. Turns out it only took us three. You know, we're not going to charge very much. We may say we think it's going to take us 10 hours. Turns out it's going to take us 30. Are we really going to charge our client 30 hours? Or are we going to, you know, let the heartstrings, you know, be part of the equation and write that work down? So, you know, working through this sort of value to the client model, where we either fix the fee at the beginning of the month or we do it as some kind of percentage, this puts us in a position where, you know, we can do our best work and not be worried about the hours.
Right.
Now, I think one of the big things that everybody always follows up with is, so are you saying that we should ditch timesheets altogether or we should stop tracking hours? And the answer is no. You're going to want to track your hours. You're going to want to understand what your staff is doing. It just means that the pricing isn't attached to those hours.
Right. And I think it doesn't completely eliminate risk, but, you know, the tax prep to some extent, or to a large extent, has been commoditized, where the cheapest price wins. And unfortunately, to some extent, the audit has seen some of this too. So you would hate to see something like CAS also become commoditized. So I think the idea of value pricing as opposed to the billable hour, it won't completely prevent that, but I think it will help ensure that firms continue to price their services appropriately, because we have conversations with so many partners who just lament the fact that they're not getting paid what they're worth or what their teams are worth. And so I think the idea of getting paid for the value you provide hopefully will prevent some of that commoditization.
One of the things that we saw in the survey this year was actually, you know, that we still have a number of services that are being priced in an hourly way. And it's one of the things that I want to call out when we encourage people to read the entire report, because the report as a snapshot of where we were at the end of 2021 really reflects the idea that practitioners are struggling with this very idea. Mm-hmm. And for so many of our of the CAS practices who responded, you know, we saw that they broke down the way that they're doing their pricing into, you know, we do some value pricing, some that's kind of a fixed fee subscription, and some that is hourly. Our top performers, however, again, when we looked at that top quartile, you know, those who had those highest net client fees per professional, that's where we really saw that we've moved the needle, and they're doing less hourly billing. Probably haven't, you know, eliminated it entirely, right. But much less of that. So, you know, I know we're talking about profitability here. Let me go ahead and throw out a few more statistics here.
Sure, absolutely.
Because one of the things that you'll notice that I've not talked about at all are the concepts of realization or utilization, some of these traditional firm metrics. And the reality is, when you stop talking about hourly billing, it's really hard to include those kinds of metrics in that conversation. So in the CAS Benchmark Survey, you know, 3 years ago or three iterations ago, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, you know, we thought we were going to be spending a lot of time talking about margin percentage or profitability. And what we realized is that particularly for small firms, that margin percentage is really hard to compare across firms of different sizes or practices of different sizes, because that margin percentage doesn't necessarily include the partner draw or, you know, salaries for partners. And so it can look really different. So we really encourage individual practices to be looking at those kinds of metrics internally, but it's a difficult thing to benchmark. Instead, we talk to practices and we collect the data for this survey around the concepts of, you know, your total CAS revenue, mm-hmm. your headcount, but also your FTE. And I'll come back to why headcount and FTE are so important. And then finally, just the number of clients, because out of those three numbers, you can start to calculate some other things. And the first one that I've mentioned a couple of times is the CAS revenue per client. So one of the things that we see in the report is that that number is pretty low. And it really takes a jump when you start looking into the data a little bit more deeply. Anybody who takes the survey, by the way, has access to a special report that compares their data against the answers across the board. And it's a great motivation to, you know, want to be involved in this report in the future, because you get a lot more information from that Excel spreadsheet that you're able to download with lots of extra data. But as you start to, you know, to parse that out, we see that those firms who are doing just a little bit of CAS, you know, what they're doing may be that once a year kind of cleanup work. Mm-hmm. They may be doing accounting work that really is tax prep and may not truly be what we think of as, you know, this forward-looking client advisory service kind of work. And as a result, their annual revenue per client is pretty low. When we see firms start to proactively offer a variety of services, including those advisory services, we see that per client revenue really go up. The other benefit to the firm, of course, is that once you have those types of services that you're offering to clients, it makes that client very sticky. You are going to have to re-win that business every year because you're working with that client collaboratively, you know, monthly or weekly. So it's not like a tax engagement where, you know, that client may or may not come back to you the following year. The next thing that we're able to calculate and we use in this survey is this concept of net client fees per professional. So the headcount may not be the same as the FTE for two reasons. We know that while it's a best practice to have dedicated staff, we know that not all CAS practices have completely dedicated staff yet. We also know that CAS is a great place for practitioners who want to work less than full time. So, you know, we see a lot of practices who have some three-quarter time people or some half-time people who are dedicated to the service line. They're just not full time. So when we take that client, you know, revenue per client and divide by our FTE, we end up with this concept of net client fees per professional. And as we see that number rise, you know, we are we believe that this is an attribute of success. We think that CAS practices who are standardized and efficient, who are pushing some of the compliance work into the technology, are able to have that higher revenue per professional. They're really entrusting those professionals to be able to handle more work, to be able to handle higher value work, and handle more revenue. So we've really landed on this concept of net client fees per professional as, you know, one way that you can use a single marker. It's, you know, there's no way to say that there's one marker that really defines complete success in CAS. But for the purposes of a survey like this, it is the measure that we have taken to mark those top performers. So all of the best practices that we start to talk about, you know, we're looking for correlations between other numbers in the survey and that top quartile. We're looking for other practices, you know, where those top performers really look different from sort of the all respondent data.
Right. So you've given some great examples of the benefits of a CAS practice. You mentioned the stickiness of clients and being able to keep those clients without having to re-win their business every single year. That can hopefully help firms hold on to the good clients. So as we've been hearing more and more, firms are looking to shed quote unquote bad clients so they can free up staff time to focus on the good clients. So the CAS practice can help with that. You mentioned the ability to work remotely. You mentioned CAS practice using part-time people, which feeds into that flexibility that a lot of workers are looking for and might help with some of the pipeline issues for the profession. So obviously, a lot of benefits to a CAS practice, you also, of course, the revenue. I think what we hear a lot from members, not just related to CAS, a lot of new things, is, you know, I'd love to be able to launch a new practice or expand a CAS practice. I don't know where to begin. So what advice do you have, or what advice do you think you can glean from the study to give to those firms that are looking to either expand or get into a CAS practice?
I think the most obvious thing that the CAS benchmark survey shares is that you can start anytime. You can start with just a few clients, but the one thing that you need to really commit to right away is to have a CAS champion. So we use this phrase, CAS champion, to be that first person who is going to be wholly dedicated to defining and deciding what the CAS practice is going to look like. And over in this survey, you know, we see that this dedicated staffing correlates to success. And so we know from speaking to the top performers in this survey, we know from having helped at CPA.com, you know, hundreds and hundreds, really thousands of firms through their CAS, you know, journey. We know that the moment when they pick that person who says, I'm no longer going to have responsibilities in other areas, I'm dedicated to making this work, that's the point at which, you know, things really start to move forward. So, you know, our advice is define that CAS champion, pick that person who's going to, you know, start the service line if you don't know where to start. Obviously, CPA.com also has a whole series of workshops that are designed to help CAS practitioners put their practice on this journey. We've launched a new introduction to CAS workshop. We've got our CAS roadmap workshop, which we've been offering for more than a decade at this point. And we have two new workshops, or more than a couple of years old new, that are to help, you know, practitioners who are already a little further along and are looking to shore up this offering. One helps firms with their CAS client assessment offering, and another is dedicated to the idea of forecasting and advisory FP&A services. So certainly there are those kinds of opportunities available, but really, you know, the biggest place is pick a CAS champion and just get started.
I think that's a great piece of advice, and a relatively simple piece of advice, not necessarily identifying who that champion is, but just making that decision that in order to move forward, you need to find somebody who's going to carry the torch. So I think that's a great piece of advice, great place to leave it. And Amy, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
It's great to be here. You know, CPA.com is really excited about the work that we're doing around helping client or helping firms understand really what CAS is, what those benefits are, why they should be offering this. It really comes down to the fact that your clients want these services. You know, there's kind of an unlimited opportunity right now. The CAS benchmark survey data shows that the double digit growth that we've seen in the last few years, it's not slowing down. It's a great time to be part of this area of the profession.
Right. It's where the profession is going or already is. Like you said, it's just a matter of finding that champion and jumping in. So thanks again. We really appreciate your time. Great information.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you all for listening and watching. To access the CPA Benchmark Survey Report, visit cpa.com/CAS and visit the NJCPA's CAS Knowledge Hub at njcpa.org/hub/CAS for articles, resources, and events.